The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Sorry about the dead air there, but having to work and get emergency computers backing up because, you know, you live by high tech, you die by high tech sometimes here too, but we got it back kind of. Sort of. We'll see how long we can make it happen. Anyway, Mr. Outdoors joins me here. Greg Roberts at RogueWeather.com. Always a pleasure to have you here because fortunately, the phones still work here too, Mr. Outdoors. How you doing today? Welcome back.
Well, yeah, I guess that's better than total shutdown. The phone's not working, nothing working. I mean, well, yeah, you're having your Monday.
Definitely having a Monday. But, you know, and so then anyway, it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes you end up having systems, you know, your computer systems that enable you to work and tie everything together. And it's an amazing system until it's not. And then when it's not, amazing, I mean, you remember you used to work here. When it's not amazing, it's really unamazing. It's really bad. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's when it goes off the rails and you start losing critical components to what you need. Yeah.
And we're not like the airlines of a couple of weeks ago, but it makes you wonder, okay, where's the CrowdStrike? Where's the CrowdStrike update in all of this? I'll have to take a look. I'll get back to you on that, okay?
So, yeah, no doubt.
Hey, wanted to touch in with you over at RogueWeather.com about how you're looking at the overall fire situation here, especially the park fire, because I've been having a great problem with the smoke. I'm glad to see the smoke's a little bit better. I've been having a tougher time this particular summer than I have other ones. And what are we looking at over the next few days? And maybe you could give us the latest on that. Last time I heard it was 350,000 acres. Has to be more than that today, right?
Yeah. In fact, I'm sitting here, and speaking of computers, I'm going to flip because, honestly, I wasn't sure which direction you were wanting me to go because I did spend some time looking at Oregon's situation.
And I want to do that, too. Sure.
Yeah, Oregon's situation is some better. I mean, let's be real. We've got currently, according to the latest report, we've got over 1 million acres of fire out there, and that sounds really bad, except for the fact that we've had a lot of big incidents east of the Cascades continue to grow, and we've also had some pretty big incidents east of the Cascades, you know, at least at 100% containment or, you know, better than 70% containment without a lot of activity happening. But I'll tell you what, when you start looking at the map, what we're also starting to see is a number of incidents merging together, and it's that merging together that creates issues for trying to get in and safely engage these fires. And some of those fires that are merging are in the Cascades to the north of Medford, and those are the ones that are contributing mostly to the smoke right now. And they're just far enough to the west that when the downsloping effect that occurs at night pushes that smoke out towards, I'm going to say, you know, the valleys west of the Cascades, like the Willamette Valley, the Umpqua Basin, that smoke then makes it far enough out that when the northwesterly winds start kicking in, that'll push that smoke down in here on Medford and Grants Pass. And that's exactly what we had been seeing happen, you know, until Saturday and yesterday. And then we got enough of a wind shift that started to push that more to a due east direction, and the downsloping effect wasn't as pronounced back to the west, and that's why we had better air quality over the weekend than what we saw on Friday. And especially, you know, Friday night, we're out there, and we had the Rogues game going, and unfortunately, throughout the course of the game, our air quality just kept deteriorating. You know, and we were kind of fearful that might impact the rest of the weekend, but Saturday and Sunday went off exactly the way the data said that we would. Mm-hmm. We had an upper-level system push in from the north, and it actually then caused that wind shift to start pushing stuff more to the east and then cut off that downsloping effect back out into, you know, the valley areas, the Willamette Valley and the Umpqua Basin again. Now, is this going to continue to be the case? Right now, that doesn't exactly look like it because, unfortunately, we're going to be moving back into hotter weather at the end of the week. Airflow patterns going to change up again. You know, we'll wait to see how much impact we're really going to have in terms of smoke from the park fire. But to update you for what they're stating this morning from the Northern California Coordination Center in Redding, it is now officially 368,256 acres. It is still showing 12% containment that I have to believe is all down on the southern end of the fire where it is far less active and where they can actually directly engage the fire and build blind right along the fire line. But I did put up a post yesterday on Rogue Weather's Facebook page that shows you they're definitely building a lot of indirect fire line, especially on that eastern portion of the fire. There are fire webcams up at Colby Mountain, and they show a very good picture of what's going on. You've got teams of bulldozers working there, taking an existing narrow road going through the forest to get to communication sites, and they've blown that thing wide open into a really big fire line, and then right directly around the communication site area, the bulldozers have literally just been stripping away the ground cover, creating a big buffer zone for that equipment. But it also would create a safety area for firefighters if they had to pull back due to fire conditions. The other thing that is definitely working in their favor, the sheer intensity of that fire, the rate of spread of that fire has definitely slowed. So we're getting some more favorable conditions to help them, you know, more directly engage the fire. But again, these are not going to last because down in California, they're going to see that heat and, you know, that kind of stuff that will help the fire activity pick up again. That will definitely be hitting down there probably Wednesday, Thursday, before it hits us Thursday, Friday.
So when you look at that park fire, Greg, how much of that is burning on burn scars? Because it almost seems to go against the narrative that, gosh, you know, you burn these forests and you're restoring the forest. And I can't help but wonder how much of this, if this is just reburning stuff that already burned maybe a year or two ago.
Yeah, well, yeah, and some of it is, and some of it is not. You know, it's just down there, there have been so many big fires over the years, you know, and it's kind of funny how even a huge fire just 3 years ago can get out of your mind. And I was thinking, you know, as this thing was blowing up and it went right past the acreages burned by, you know, say the car fire and the campfire, mm-hmm. I was thinking, well, boy, this has to be the biggest single fire in Northern California in a really long time. And I totally forgot about a fire that happened down there, like I said, just 3 years ago, the Dixie Fire. Well, this fire is just to the west of the Dixie Fire burn scar, and this fire running north has shut down Lassen National Park because it has run so far north, it's coming up against the Lassen National Park boundary, and there's really only two access points into Lassen National Park, and they're both on the west side of the park, and they're both threatened by this fire, and so they just shut the park down until they can get this fire under control.
Wow. Okay. And as far as our Oregon fires, shifting back to the Oregon fires again, is it another one of those things? Is it another one of those things where we're in pretty good shape until, you know, until the heat ends up returning this week? How would you evaluate it?
You know, over in Eastern Oregon, a lot of these fires, what they're burning through, grass is a big component. And when you start looking at the fires with the bigger acreage totals. There is a lot of grass that they're going through. And so when you get the hotter conditions, you know, that obviously, especially for grass, makes it a lot more volatile. But even just your typical afternoon winds coming up over there can really send these fires off and running. And so if you get any kind of pressure gradient tightening that creates wind fields, you know, it's more bad news. And that's the problem. As we make this transition into this hotter weather, it will likely also create more windy conditions over there east of the Cascades, which is going to help further fuel these bigger fires. And in far eastern Oregon, we've got these major fires that we've been seeing, the Cal Valley, the Durkee, and now there's other fires just to the east of those two fires. They're all blending together. When you start looking at it on the map, it's getting harder to see where one fire is actually at because they're all starting to merge together. And we're going to have these huge areas of burned off ground that as you start expanding the fire perimeter, it just gets tougher and tougher to control. And with the drain on resources right now, we've got some fires that, you know, right now look pretty good that may become major issues again here in about the next 3 to 4 days.
Okay. All right. So we'll keep an eye out on that. Your opinion, having been, you know, both a wildland firefighter and also checking weather, everything we're told now is that this is climate change, right? We hear this all the time, climate change. And I know that certainly we are in a hotter, drier period right now than, let's say, maybe the late 1980s, arguably, you know, a wetter, cooler time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't help but combine the collapse of logging as having some contributory thing. I'm not saying like being in the woods would all of a sudden make a total difference, but there has to be some effect that the almost total collapse of logging while fuel continues to grow year after year would have had to have some effect on what we're dealing with even today. Is that a fair assessment or unfair?
And I tell people all the time, and I, in fact, Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest put up this thing where they had these squirrels in the 1940s. Everybody's aware of Smokey Bear.
Right.
But they did use other forms of wildlife to help convey the message that every fire is a threat. Well, when you look at our situation that's going on today, it's the byproduct of two things. Number one, it was the hysterical overreaction to fire because we conditioned the populace to believe that there was no such thing as a good fire. They were all bad fires, and they all had to be put out the instant they were seen. And when you had all those loggers in the woods here, that that actually was achieving the goal. But then we go to the opposite extreme, and then it was decided that logging was evil and we needed to stop it. And what nobody was told was, oh, by the way, when we take the loggers away, that's going to take away the real initial attack force on fires.
Mm. Yeah, kind of the unintended consequence of having done that. All right.
And then you start stacking that with the fact that then the Forest Service is out of money and they don't have any budget left to do management. And then it was just waiting for the dominoes to fall. And we finally started to see the dominoes fall, you know, after 2000. And Biscuit Fire should have been a huge wake-up call, and it wasn't. And once we reached 2013, you start factoring in other, you know, considerations, the lack of air support from the number of air tankers that we used to have, the number of helicopters we used to have, that got cut. You know, we just gradually over time started seeing fewer and fewer people showing up wanting to fight fires. It just, you can kind of see how all the factors come together to create the mess that we have now.
So it's not any one. It's not just any one thing.
It's not any one thing. It's the combination. And the sad part is it took us a long time. It took us decades to get here. The brutal truth is it's going to take us decades to go the other direction, because you can't just magically restore logging now. You can't magically put 6,000 guys in the woods the way we used to have it back, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And the other hard part is, where would you find those people now? You can't make people decide they want to do work that they flat don't want to do. The generational aspect of logging that sustained a lot of this, where we had entire families that logging is what they did, when that was done, those people went to do other things, and a lot of them in other areas of the country. And you look at employers now for jobs that are far less demanding than logging and firefighting, begging for people to come to work, and you tell me you're going to be able to find 6,000 people right now in Jackson and Josephine counties that would be willing to go out and work hard 12 to 18 hours every day in horrific terrain where death is literally a misstep away?
Yeah, you got a good point, though. You got a good point. It's kind of like, you know, you're also trying to find this group out of a low-T workforce, too, you know, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, again, you just said something right there, a low-T workforce. Society has changed, and not always for the betterment, because I still believe that one day the crisis we're having now in firefighting and finding able-bodied people who want to do it, guess what? Day's going to come where this is going to become a military situation. I'm looking at a lot of stuff right now from World War II. And I will tell you right now, if we had to undertake something like World War II right now in today's America, I don't think we could do it. I just flat don't.
One could argue with you. I don't think that they would get very far, though. It's the real world. I know that there's a famous meme that I shared one time that showed, like, some young, skinny American male there with, like, an RPG in his hands or something like that. It was obviously, it's probably, in some winter-type deal. And, of course, he's looking rough and tough and yet a skinny little drink of water. And then there's the rainbow-colored person calling himself a man that was being represented as the man today. I'm sure you've seen that one, right?
Yeah, I've seen a whole bunch of them.
Mm-hmm. Kind of what we saw on display at the Olympics opening on Friday, right?
Yeah. See, and the Summer Olympics, honestly, since Caitlyn Jenner had that exceptional Olympics in the heptathlon, I really don't get too interested in anything that happens in the summer. Then again, there's not really a lot in terms of sport there that interests me. Winter Olympics, totally different kettle of fish because of the ski racing.
Yeah, I know you like that.
I never really pay attention to it.
I get really impressed, though, of what I can see gymnasts do with their body. And I just like, I as someone who can barely dance, you know, dance at his own wedding, right? You know, I look at the way at what some of these young men and young women can do. It's just like, my gosh, what you can do with that kind of dedication. And I just have to, sometimes I have to try to ignore just the incredible communist politics surrounding everything that was going on at that opening Olympic ceremony. I mean, really, drag queen as Jesus? It's like, come on, man. Amazing how the French are so brave at mocking Christianity. Yeah. You notice how they didn't do anything about Islam. I don't know.
Oh, no, definitely not. That's the third rail nobody's going to touch. And you know why? Because they know there's a high likelihood of death and destruction if they do. Nobody is scared by Christians, period.
I don't know. Maybe someday they'll start being scared at some point, but not at this point in time. But all right, Greg, I didn't mean to get off. I kind of got off on the track there. But
hey, we started in one place because of fire, which led to other comments about society in general. And Yeah, you know, it just, it's a sad state that we're in because we need a lot of the things we once had in abundance that we don't have anymore. Mm. And now that we don't have them, we see how valuable they were and how much they're missed. And some of that went away for no good reason, and some of it's gone away just because it's been hammered into people's heads that you deserve more doing less. Yeah. And hard work just is not, and I'm going to stand on this one, hard work is just not valued anymore and preached the way it used to be. Certainly when I was growing up, when you were growing up, I grew up with one of Patton's tank commanders, and that man put a core of iron in me, and he would not brick laziness, or what he termed laziness, in any fashion.
Yeah, I know. That is not the America that we have right now. And no. And truth be told, I know that I'm sure that right now I could hear my Gen Z son saying, okay, Boomer Dad, or okay, Gen X, Greg. I think you're a Gen Xer, aren't you?
No, actually, I'm tail end Boomer. I'm 64.
Oh, okay, you're tail end Boomer. Okay, so we got two Boomers that are thinking that way. Of course, I remember that, you know, as young people, we weren't exactly praised all that well. So maybe it's just kind of the standard operating procedure. You know, the older generation looks in there and says, well, remember, even what we call the greatest generation right now, back in the 1920s, were considered a whole bunch of ne'er-do-wells. Just a bunch of, you know, hooligans weren't able to, you know, figure out much of anything.
I'll tell you what, that back in the 20s, that level of ne'er-do-well compared to today's, in terms of the amount of time you can waste in absolutely nothing, that didn't exist. I mean, we talk a lot, you know, about how do you get people to want to come out to sporting events? How do we get people to come out to a Rogues game? Which, yeah, you know, thankfully we did. And, you know, we had over 1,200 people at the ballpark last night. We broke 30,000, actually 30,400 for the season for attendance, which was awesome. But Friday night football games for me are coming up because I announced for North Medford Black Tornado. I look at Spiegelberg Stadium, and I vividly remember being younger, not a little kid, I mean younger as in teens, 20s, into my 30s, where Friday night, Spiegelberg Stadium was the place to be in Medford, and we would have 9,000 to 10,000 people showing up every Friday night.
Well, you don't see that now because there are multiple avenues of distraction now that didn't exist then. And I remember
exactly.
I lived on Holly Street. I had a little house on Holly Street, and you know what was it, 906 Holly Street, 907. That's right.
Oh yeah,
right
there at the stadium.
I was right there behind it, and so listen, I heard all the action. But that was even then, 30-something years ago, different time, fewer distractions at that point. Internet really kind of just getting going. And I think, yeah, we're certainly seeing a transformation of society. Hey, Greg, we have some people might want to talk with you. Let's grab some calls here. Hi, you're on with Greg. Okay. Good morning. Who's this?
Hey, good morning, Greg. Michael Shaw here. I just had a curiosity since we're talking about fighting fires. I believe it was Evergreen that Erickson bought out. Whatever happened to their large 747 water dropper?
And eventually, you know, despite what Lars Larson is going to tell you, it was eventually deemed too ineffective too much of the time, and they did not issue a contract for it again. And as far as I am aware, both of the 747s that were converted into air tankers got stripped and have been sold for salvage, and they have put the emphasis for air tankers not so much on the DC-10s, although there are still four DC-10s flying. They have actually put them back into C-130 airframes.
Uh-huh.
That they actually had declared, well, maybe we shouldn't use the C-130. Well, you need to quit using the A through the D variant of the C-130. The newer C-130s are doing just fine, so we're seeing more and more C-130s, but we're also seeing more effort into converting, especially right now, those Q-400 commuter airliners that we used to see here in Medford so much because Horizon flew them, Alaska flew them.
Yeah.
They're now being converted and turned back into air tankers, and they do a really good job at that. We're also seeing a lot of effort into converting the 737 airframes into air tankers because they've proven to be very effective, and you know, that's where the emphasis went.
I would imagine it's easier to maintain a newer airframe.
Better.
I would imagine it's easier to maintain a newer airframe rather than the 747, pretty old frame at this point in time,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
It's a pretty old frame. And then the other thing about the 747, it was ridiculously limited on where it could actually work from as an air tanker. And Lars Larson blew all kind of hot air, and he brings the president of the company on saying, well, you can use this plane everywhere. No, actually, you can't. We couldn't use it. We couldn't fill it here in Medford. There was only two places that those things could get used from in the United States. One was Colorado Springs, where the company was based and has a huge Air Force facility there that they used. And then the other one, Sacramento, California, at a former Air Force facility at McClellan. That
yeah.
was it.
And that has to do with the maneuverability of the 747, too, the mere size yeah. of the plane. A lot of
and it actually was used on fires here in Jackson County, and as soon as I saw the video of that aircraft being used in northwestern Jackson County, I go, the release point is way too high. And then when they did try to lower the release point on fires in California, that plane tragically caused an incident where it released too low, and it knocked trees down on firefighters from Utah that were in California
yeah.
to help assist on fires, and it wound up killing two firefighters and seriously injuring, you know, 10 others, and that was pretty much the end of the 747.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was better to go with smaller, perhaps more more useful, more nimble, I would say, aircraft to be able to do
yeah.
some of that.
And honestly, if you really want to put the effort into anything that maximizes the amount of water you can put on a fire in a fast period of time, short turnaround, we should be getting all the sky crane helitankers into the air that we can that can hold anywhere from 2,000 to 3,000 gallons of water. Because in terms of being able to put wet stuff on red stuff, nothing puts the volume down that those things do in a short amount of time.
All right. Talking with Greg Roberts, RogueWeather.com, talking fire this morning here. So that was worth picking up here. If you have a question, hang on. We'll be right with you. This is the Bill Myers Show, KMED, KBXG.
Hi, it's John at Welburn's Weapons. The only thing better than shooting is shooting with a suppressor. Welburn's is Southern Oregon's suppressor headquarters, stocking models from Silencer Code, Dead Air, Griffin Armament, Rugged, Q, Thunderbeast, and many more. And we can order practically any suppressor on the market. Check in with us for monthly incentives to save on suppressors, too. Come see the suppressor experts. Welburn's Weapons on Crater Lake Highway, just south of White City.
Ready to upgrade your roof to a durable, sleek metal option? Look no further than Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. With our state-of-the-art snap-lock machines, we bring precise and efficiency right to your doorstep. No need to worry about transporting materials. We come directly to your project property. Visit StephenWestfallRoofingInc.com and discover the ease of quality of metal roofing done right. Transform your home with Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Call today, get an estimate tomorrow. 541-941-3736.
Coming up on the next Hughes Lumber. When 2x4s get together, only one thing can happen. Walls get built. Check out the studs, followed by contractors and do-it-yourselfers. Featuring lumber, hardware, and siding. Starring decks, additions, and ADUs. It's the return of home enhancements. But watch out for that knotty pine. Get the best build for your buck values at Hughes Lumber. Your top show for quality, price, selection, service. So don't miss Hughes Lumber on Crater Lake Highway next to Garrison's.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastles offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastles friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastles, where the customer is king.
Saudis drop the petrol, times are changing fast. Rush of China bricks, they're shaking off the past. Down in Ashland Town, there's a place to find your trust. J. Austin and Company's where you gotta put your bucks. Dollar ain't as strong, but the silver's gleaming bright. Gotta hedge your bets, make sure you sleep at night. Winding through the hills to that little country store, J. Austin and Company will help you keep some more. Get your gold and silver, stash it while you can. Future's feeling shaky, better take a stand. J. Austin and Company, for your silver and your gold.
News is sponsored by Millett Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. Wildfires have scorched over 1 million acres of Oregon so far, and that total will continue to grow. Officials say the potential for the initiation of new large fire starts and overall growth on existing fires plateaued over the weekend. According to the Northwest Interagency Coordination Center, there's really no high-risk areas right now. As of Sunday, 45 large fires are burning in Oregon. The Durkee Fire is still the largest at 289,000 acres in eastern Oregon. It's 49% contained. As wildfires continue to burn throughout the state and extreme weather events impact communities, Oregon residents are reminded to be prepared for potential power outages as utilities implement public safety power shutoffs. The shutoffs are now prevalent after Pacific Power continues to lose lawsuits over their failure to shut down power during the Labor Day fires of 2020. Bill London, KMED News.
This is the Bill Myers Show on 106.3 KMED. Got something on your mind? Give Bill a shout at 541-770-5633. 770-KMED.
And this portion of the program is sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center. Phoenix Auto Center. And let me go back to Greg Roberts at Rogue Weather. Kind of an extended talk on the fall, on the fire, rather, and logging issues out of Rogue Weather. And let me glad, I'm looking here, Greg, who we got lined up here. Jack, you wanted to weigh in here, too. Go ahead. You're with Greg. What's on your mind?
Hey, Bill. Hey, Greg. You know, there was a lot of things that happened in the 80s and 90s that occurred that, you know, we lost so many pilots with long line experience because that's how we used to log. And then the logging kind of went away in the, late 90s, one because the timber market went from $1,200 a thousand down to $400 a thousand board feet. So, you know, our last 3 years logging with Carson, we only logged burns. And we lost a lot of experience there. And I think another thing is with those 130s, you know, the old A models and B models out of Chico at Aero Union, that one crash we had was devastating. But it was all because they didn't do the wing root X-ray inspections like they were supposed to.
Yeah, and, you know, again, when they started looking into that, and, you know, the crash of Tanker 121 is something I'm never going to forget. And, you know, unfortunately, that was caught in horrifying detail because news media was right there on that fire. They looked at the structural component on those earlier C-130s, and there was an old design, and it was called a box design, where the wing attached to the fuselage that the newer variants of the aircraft, they don't have. They changed how the aircraft was built.
Yeah, where stress cracks more prevalent on the old design.
C-130 back to use.
Yeah, were the stress cracks more prevalent on the old design of the C-130?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And a new metallurgy that they came out with later now, you know, in the 2000s, it's a much more improved metallurgy as far as those wing root improvements were. So,
and the other thing I would mention, Jack, is that, you know, to your point, though, so much of the institutional memory of the logging industry, like you had talked about, is gone. And it took decades to lose that, and the chances of that coming back right away are very slim, if ever. Okay, let me go to Gary. You wanted to weigh in here, too. Greg Roberts with you. Fire away.
Morning, Greg. Morning, Bill. I live in Curry County, and our sheriff just laid off, I think it was 11 of his employees because they have no funding from the forest products. Over 50% of Curry County is owned by the Forest Service, and it's just dead land off the tax rolls, and they have no the funding's is gone now.
Yeah, and that's another byproduct. I mean, we talked about losing the loggers. We've talked about, you know, the other aspects. But, you know, these counties, and they're referred to as the ONC counties that were heavily dependent on timber, losing that caused a whole cascade of other things to develop in terms of services to the communities. And unfortunately, Sheriff's Department and law enforcement really took that on the chin, because when the timber money was gone, they just flat didn't have anything else to replace it. And it created, you know, literally a crisis across every county here in Southwest Oregon.
Well, you know, it was sort of
going to offer services.
I mean, I don't think it's too much hyperbole to say that we ended up living through our own hillbilly elegy, kind of like what J.D. Vance was talking about, what it was like in the deindustrialized areas of southern Ohio and northern Kentucky, you know, as and so, you know, the methamphetamine, the heroin, everything moves in to the culture of despair, which ends up being left behind. And you have people that were productive all of a sudden not being productive. And so what do? Well, you go in with the cartels, I guess, start your dope grows and
well, actually, more what happened, because what you're talking about is a newer development. What actually happened was we saw people flat move away.
Mm-hmm.
That's what actually happened. They left.
But then the people left behind, though.
Right. The people left behind, having a lot of resource taken away. Money flowing through the economy, mm-hmm. services from the counties. I mean, we can start rolling down the list.
And all you have to do is look at it. It was a political hit job on Southern Oregon and Northern California. It really was a political hit job. And it's still being hit today. I mean, you watch our various U.S. senators who are completely against any kind of real productive use of the land, and all they talk about is prescribed burns, we're going to get prescribed fire on this thing. You can't hire enough collaborative professional arsonists to make up for what harvesting and management of land used to perform in those days. You just can't do it. There aren't enough drip torches to do it.
No, there's not. And, you know, I just heard you say it. I cringe at it. I get angry when other people say it, because being arsonist is not what you're trying to do. What you're trying to do is bring back something that the landscape needs and was evolved for. And having been, okay, if you want to term it that way, then Bill, I was an arsonist for a period of time in my life. Because I was one of those who was out there putting fire on the landscape in low to moderate intensity to try and restore something that we took away, because you must prevent wildfires. Every fire is a bad fire.
Yeah, I get
and
that.
It wasn't.
But, you know, here it is. We're now at the point where the push, though, was to, you know, people would be asking for permits to do prescribed burns in the middle of fire season like they are right now, and then you destroy our smoke.
Supposed to happen. You're never supposed to be doing a prescribed burn in the middle of fire season.
I know that, but I can assure you that people have been asking for permits to try to do it, and then Jackson County turns them down, though, because of policy.
Yeah, well, they're morons then, because you have clear windows of time if you're going to do prescribed burns. Spring is a big one, and then there's a secondary in the fall, and then through the winter, you will have pile burns, and some of those can be the little smaller piles, and some of them will be the big, huge slash piles, but through the winter, you will be able to burn piles. But the prescribed burns, where you're truly putting fire down on the landscape, those actually happen in very well-orchestrated terms, because, yes, you can have them get away, but on the other hand, it's incumbent on whoever is executing the burn to be well aware of all the conditions they're going to have and to be able to make sure they've got the resource they need so that if they have to shut their burn down quickly, they can do it. With all the fires that I did, I can truthfully say I never had a single one get away, and I never had a single one rekindle and turn into a wildfire.
Yeah, like we would see down in Mexico. New Mexico had quite a bit of that going on.
Everybody points to Los Alamos, and that is the horrific example of when it goes bad.
Mm-hmm. All right,
Greg. I got on a fire in 1992 in Central Oregon, the Mule Fire. Supposed to be a 150-acre controlled burn that turned into a 2,000-plus-acre out-of-control fire that we had some pretty anxious moments trying to defend some homes out there near Sisters, as that fire was really ripping there for a little bit. But we saved everything we needed to save, and we did get that fire back under control and get it put out. But, we get better at learning things, and I think especially I watch what goes on here with our controlled burns in the spring. I'm not aware of a single one that's gotten away.
Other than the one that was in the Ashland watershed. Remember that one?
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. Lomacotsi had that one. And honestly, when you look at the map of what they were eventually going to be treating, most of that would have eventually been burned anyway, but they had the one that for the burn they were doing, it did get outside of their boundary they had preset.
All right.
We had something similar actually happen this year over at Klamath National Wildlife Refuge. We had a very early in the season lightning start fire that it got going, and then when they started taking a look at, well, here's what we had planned to do, why don't we just go ahead and let this fire develop into what we were planning to do? And so a wildfire actually turned into accomplishing what they had planned to do with controlled burns this year and next year, and they just went ahead and used it that way.
All right, very good. Hey, Greg? I appreciate the extended fire conversation this morning, this Monday, getting things rolling. And we'll have you back later this week. And if things just blow up, super blow up as it gets a little hotter here, you're welcome back. You just give me a buzz when you think.
Appreciate that. But obviously right now, the situation in Eastern Oregon is what it is. But in terms of potential impact for the amount of damage it can do, and then potential impact as we start seeing southerly winds come up, we're going to keep watching the Park fire and see exactly what happens down there.
All right, very good. You take care. Greg Roberts keeping you up on these issues on RogueWeather.com. Like him, follow him on Facebook and elsewhere. Thanks, Greg. We'll talk. Okay? See
you. You got it, Bill.
755-770-5633. If you're on hold, I will certainly get to you and your calls, anything on your mind here. It's Monday. A little bit of noodling around on whatever you want. This is KMED and KBXG.
Hi, it's Jolene with Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. We've got summer savings on quality Continental tires. Through August, get a $110 Visa prepaid card in the mail when you purchase a set of qualifying tires for your truck, SUV, or van. And there's 16 different popular styles to choose from, including Cross Contact, 4x4 Contact, Terrain Contact, and Premium Contact. Continental is one of our most recommended tire brands, so if you need a set for your truck, SUV, or van, come see us at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros in Phoenix.
Who'll Stop the Rain is a classic 1970 hit from Creedence Clearwater that reached number 2 on the U.S. Billboard Pop Singles chart. While Millett Construction doesn't know the answer to John Fogerty's question, they do know how to fix your home's foundation if moisture is making it unstable. So don't worry about clouds of mystery pouring confusion on the ground. Millett will fix your foundation, level your house, and solve the water problem that's causing the damage. Get on solid ground. Visit MillettConstruction.com for a free consultation.
Rule number 1, if you're looking to sell a home, choose a local real estate agent. Hey, it's Lars. And why? It starts with an overall knowledge of the area. But even more importantly, a local agent is a friend and neighbor who cares about the community just as much as you do. In the Medford area, that'd be my good friend Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty. Jared's a native of the Pacific Northwest, and his wife, Colette, is a former Oregon Young Mother of the Year. The Hokansons love Southern Oregon so much, they decided to raise their family there. If you're thinking of selling, Jared Hokanson guarantees to sell your home. And if he can't get it sold at a price and deadline you both agreed to, Jared will buy it himself. Some restrictions do apply. Find out what your property is worth for free and instantly. 541-772-SOLD.com. Call Jared today at 541-772-SOLD. That's 541-772-7653. Jared Hokanson of Hokanson Realty.
Power outages are becoming more common. Patriot Electric can size you with the correct Generac generator backup system for when outages occur. Whether you need a powerful portable or a whole house system to power your house, barn, shop, and pump house, a flip of a switch will produce power when you need it the most to pump water and provide essentials like AC and refrigeration. Call Patriot Electric and get your own Generac generator, an investment you'll never regret. We are Generac sales, installation, and service professionals. Visit PatriotElectricOregon.com.
It's the Bill Myers Show on KMED, Southern Oregon's place to talk.
It's a couple minutes before 8. This is KMED, KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Looking here in Rogue Valley Times this morning, the Say Their Names Memorial in Railroad Park has now been rebuilt for the fifth time, they're saying here. And this is the one that has all the shirts that are up there in... Volunteers are, I guess, using the original Say Their Names memorial list of 200 black Americans who lost their lives to racial violence. I wonder what the Say Their Name people in Ashland would think about adding Ashley Babbitt's name to the Say Their Name. Arguably, I don't know if it was like racial violence, but certainly lost her life for a fraud of some sort. But yeah, she's white, so I guess, she losing her life was not all that important. Do you think they'd be intellectually honest enough in Ashland to say that maybe people should say her name to Ashley Babbitt, someone who should not have lost her life? Just saying. Let me go to Janet. Hello, Janet. You wanted to talk about, the fire and various other issues in schools in Eagle Point. Go ahead.
Yeah, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, maybe 80s, logging provided unbelievable amount of resources for the schools because of the ONC lands and the contracts and all of this kind of thing. But look at our schools now. Where's the funding coming from when your half of your source of funding is burned up? It's just it breaks my heart. And I guess it doesn't really matter now, but look at our schools now.
Yeah, it is a issue. I don't know if funding is the problem, though. When you look at it, because it is
there's a multitude of why there's a problem.
Yeah, because when you look at it, even at minimum, you're looking at about $18,000 a year in funding, which is assigned to many children. Some school districts have $25,000 to $30,000 per year per student.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And whether it's coming from the general fund or property taxes or some other type of a funding mechanism. The issues, I think, with schools, with most schools, are I don't think it's the funding right now here, Janet. Truth be told.
Well, I know you're right on that, but it's just like I know with half of how much of the ONC lands there are, they could be used. It could supplement, and let's give the taxpayers a break.
Yeah, if there's no
wherever the funding can come from, then do
but,
it.
But yeah, but you would need. Different senators, different ideological points of view from senators, not just Merkley and Wyden, but every senator on the West Coast, for all intents and purposes, is into these. We don't do anything productive with these lands, and we burn the forest to restore it.
Yeah.
So
I have another idea about the forest. I don't know if I have time to share it or if you want to hear it, but I do have one other opinion about the forest and who could run them.
Okay.
We have how many million migrants? All right. Like the Irish were treated like trash when my family moved here from Ireland during the famine. When other immigrants came from other countries, they took the jobs nobody else wanted and they became respected citizens.
Oh, my. You know, you're reminding me of my in-laws that always talked about put on your shoes. You don't want to be a dirty shanty Irish.
That's right.
Yeah.
You work hard, you're looked down on, but by golly, you provided a service. They built the railroads. They were the police officers of all things. excuse me, don't need to go on and on.
Yeah.
But give them, you've got a skill, you've got, we've got a valuable lack, we've got a valuable income producing source for you to become a working American, and you will be helping us all, which is the whole point.
Yeah.
We are the melting pot. And I'm not saying, I'm just saying there's, if, okay.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of America that was that just ain't so anymore, Janet. I don't want to rain on it. I mean, I appreciate,
no.
I think of the Stern stuff. I think of the Stern stuff that happened with past generations and the deprivations, but you know, we ended up getting really soft. Okay, I guess that's the other way of putting it. We're all pretty soft.
The only thing about the good old days is we folks who remember them are that much closer to heaven where it ain't going to matter.
Yeah. There you go, Janet. There you go.
It's our kids. This is, what have we done for our kids?
Yeah. Well, it's going to be their world. I hope that they can be smart and figure it out, Janet. Appreciate your call, and thanks for making that, okay? It's 3 minutes after 8. By the way, Jan Dunlap, a different Jan, ended up writing in this morning, says, hey, Bill, as far as the jail conversation went, yeah, we're going to have to reschedule that, Janet, because there is a bit of a family challenge in Commissioner Roberts' family right now. They're working through something. Can't really give any details on that, but we'll reschedule her this week when she has available time. So didn't get a chance to mention that. But anyway, just pray for Commissioner Roberts' family is all I'm going to say this morning. Just family members, if you can put them in your prayer today. There's some hospitalization going on. It's a pretty big deal, but I'm not at liberty to discuss the actual details, okay? It's 4 minutes after 8. Tom writes me this morning, Bill, here is Dr. Joel Wallach's treatment story, or treatment entry from his large reference section of his bestseller, Dead Doctors Don't Lie. We've successfully used many of his answers, although I've not had direct experience with varicose veins. Huh. And I'm looking at Wallach. He sends me a shot of the book here because, you know, I've had varicose veins since I was a little kid, had them through my mother's side of the family, and I've been standing up in radio studios for 45 years. Varicose veins are thought to be caused by constipation and constant vertical posture. Well, I don't have constipation. I know that. And a copper deficiency may also be a contributing factor. Treatment of varicose veins should include vitamin C, vitamin E at 800 to 11. Okay, zinc. Okay, I need zinc then. Bioflavonoids, DMSO, hydrotherapy, copper, 2 milligrams per day. And herbs including marigold, topically, and yellow sweet clover. Interesting. I might check. You know, it would cost very little for me to try that, Tom, all right? I'll give that a shot, okay? I appreciate that. But yeah, ever since the fire smoke popped up this summer, when it started getting really heavy, I started getting some real inflammatory issues, and I can't help but think of the connection. And it could be just a coincidence. Correlation isn't necessarily causation, but I have to figure there's a lot of inflammatory aspects of inhaling lots of wildfire smoke. This is KMED, KMED HD1 Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with...